From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. In just a few days, Germans will go to the polls to vote for a new government. And in a typical year, I gotta say, I wouldn't care. I mean, let's face it, the German elections are sleepy compared to what we're used to here, and they don't affect us, right? But things are different with this election, and they're different in ways that sound strangely familiar. First, fake news. Yeah, it's a thing, just like it was in our election. And so are alleged Russian meddling, hate groups, and the rise of right-wing politicians with a nationalist agenda. That's happening in Germany, too. This is the rally of a right-wing group called Pegida. They gathered back in March on an old market square in the middle of Dresden. They do this once a week, and their rallies always start with music, a cross between elevator music and Lord of the Rings, maybe? A woman steps onto a tiny stage and starts reading the rules of the rally. This is Germany, after all. Public gatherings are regulated to the smallest detail. She says flags can't be taller than 2 meters. Also, very important, no laser pointers, no LED lights, no overly bright bicycle lights. All seems pretty tame. But then the music changes. And suddenly, they're playing clips of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. They're chanting traitor to the people, a term that was used by the Nazis. And then Merkel must go. There's a guy holding a poster that shows Merkel wearing a Hitler mustache and a hijab. She's got outstretched hands covered in blood. A political poster like that would offend people here, but in Germany, it's outrageous and unheard of. Until now. And it doesn't stop there.
Lügenpresse?
This guy's yelling Lügenpresse, or lying press. It's the same term that American white supremacist Richard Spencer likes to use. And the reporter this guy's yelling at is Luisa Beck. Luisa is a German-American reporter partnering with us and the online news organization Coda Story. She was raised in Germany and has been tracking the rise of right-wing populism in Germany's election. She takes it from here.
Lügenpresse is a word that Adolf Hitler used to bash media that was critical of him during World War II. People here think all mainstream media is biased and in cahoots with their political rivals. I try to talk with them, but most refuse. Pegida stands for Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West. And standing in the middle of their rally, you get a good sense of the issues being debated in this year's election. The future of the EU, Islam, border security, refugees. Pegida's not a political party. They're more like a fringe group of activists. But they're finding a friend in a new party that is running for office, the AfD, or Alternative for Deutschland. I decide to seek out one of the AfD's leading candidates, Beatrix von Storch. When I arrive at the address in Berlin, an old mustard-colored apartment building, there's a sign for a doctor's office, but no sign anywhere for a politician's headquarters. Only a tiny buzzer.
Okay, danke.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, and we don't have a sign here in the house. This is for security reasons. Yes, so we have got a
Beatrix von Storch's party has no chance of winning a majority in parliament, but they could win seats, which would give them a say in policymaking. I walk inside her office, and it's clean and orderly. Her desk completely empty, except for a flyer that says, Das Beste kommt noch, which means the best is still to come.
Yes, so we have got a police here who checked the house and then we changed the doors and all this kind of stuff.
Has there been vandalism in the past for AfD offices?
Yes, a bit. I mean, not a bit, but a lot.
She pulls out her phone and shows me photos of her office. Spray-painted walls, broken windows, and lots of messages scribbled across her door.
Again, something here. Hure, bitch. So we overpainted it, and then they burned my car.
They burned it.
Yeah. This used to be my car. So...
Do you know who did it?
It's the far left. This is what we know. It has been published on some far left forbidden or illegal website. And
she swipes to a photo of a graffitied message on her office wall about her grandfather.
The thing is, they're talking about my grandfather. My grandfather was a finance minister of Adolf Hitler. Yes, he was. So they put that on my door.
Even though people attack von Storch, she doesn't look threatening. She's in her mid-40s, wears pink pastel pants, and if anything, comes off as rather aristocratic, just like you'd expect from the daughter of a German duchess. And that's not all she is.
I'm vice chair of the Alternative for Germany, stellvertretende Sprecherin der AfD im Bund, and I'm now on the list, on the regional list for the election for the Bundestag, for the region of Berlin, I'm a leading candidate. I'm candidate number one. And I'm a member of the European Parliament.
When you talk to von Storch, you get the sense that Germany is under attack.
We have a severe problem, so we're not able to take in other millions from other cultural background.
She's talking about refugees. In 2015, as people were fleeing wars in Syria, Afghanistan, and other countries, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel did something unprecedented. She allowed over 1.1 million refugees to enter the country. Much of the world celebrated the decision as humanitarian. But for von Storch, it was a big mistake.
We want to have clear rules. We want to have a rule which is saying who fits into our society, who wants to integrate into our society, whom do we need, and then we want to pick them. And because everyone is claiming to be an asylum seeker, and so we don't pick them. We are just letting them in.
Actually, that's not true anymore. These days, the German government severely restricts who is allowed to enter and stay. If an asylum seeker cannot show they're politically threatened in their home country, they could be deported. Chancellor Merkel herself has since vowed that a situation like the summer of 2015 must not be repeated. Still, foreigners coming to live in Germany, that's the issue that von Storch is using to win supporters for the AfD party. And it's something Germans have grappled with for a long time. Many don't consider Germany a nation of immigrants, even though millions of foreign guest workers have lived here for decades. To see how von Storch is using this touchy subject to win voters, I follow her on a campaign sweep through one of Germany's most conservative states, Bavaria. We're in the city of Augsburg. It's in the south of Germany, just outside of Munich. It's predominantly Catholic, and on Sundays, families are out, strolling around, enjoying street music. The campaign event is at a beer house, and outside, there are way more police cars than passenger cars. And inside, Beatrix von Storch stands on a stage and rails against the media. She goes through a list of articles and tells the audience how each story gets something wrong. At one point, she quotes a conservative politician of another party.
We need to stop the thousands of human traffickers who've taken the EU hostage and, if necessary, to take up arms.
Although she's quoting someone else, von Storch has agreed with the sentiment. Last year, when someone on Facebook asked, "Do you want women with children to be denied entry by armed force?" she replied with a simple yes. But for von Storch, the biggest thing plaguing Germany isn't just controlling the border. It's Islam.
As a culture, we won't make compromises with Islam. We won't let Germany get taken over by Islam.
I ask her what kind of compromises she means, and she brings up Islamic law, also known as Sharia.
Sharia is not only regulating the personal, Sharia is also civil law and punishing law and public law, and it claims to, you know, organize the society and ruling the way of living. This is not compatible with our culture and with our way of living.
Yes, she's right that some Muslims consider Sharia law important in their lives. But to be clear, if someone who's Muslim does not comply with German law, they could go to prison, just like anyone else. Her next worry is a lot cruder.
So not to have short, very short skirts or all this kind of stuff, not to provoke the Muslim men because they might, you know, misunderstand a short scarf as inviting them to rape.
The German Federal Statistics Office has no data on sexual harassment by Muslim men, and there's no proof that there's an upward trend. But what we do know is that crimes against foreigners living in Germany have been going up.
It's a very clear line what we have. Islam does not belong to Germany, and it does not fit into our society, doesn't go together with our values.
Beatrix von Storch isn't the first to make Islamophobic statements in Germany, but she and her party have been more successful than anyone else at spreading that message. And she's had some effective teachers.
My party only was founded in 2013, but years before, I founded myself a grassroots movement, which basically was acting like those Tea Party we knew from the United States.
So basically you learned from the strategies of the conservatives, including the Tea Party, and then used them here.
Sure. So we had people to teach us and to tell us who had spent their time in the United States, and we made them come to us and advise us how to do this.
The Tea Party. This is the last place I expect to hear about them. But it turns out there are a lot of people here who feel that Germany should be looking to the U.S. Back outside, I meet a guy named Max Nagler.
Donald Trump. Yes, yes, great. I'm happy he got elected because in his whole way he is so different, and because I think that political establishments all over the Western world are so corrupt, right, that somebody who stirs them up at least gives me the hope that something better might happen.
Because Max is from Bavaria and works as a mailman. But he dresses more like a male model. He wears snakeskin shoes, designer jeans, and proudly tells me people confuse him for being Italian. He's been a member of von Storch's party for about 6 months, but this is the first time he's heard her speak live.
Okay, so what did you think of what she had to say?
I think all in all, it was pretty much the truth or how we feel about it. So many Muslim people coming into the country who will have children, of course, and you don't have to have gone to Harvard to know that this will make Germany and Europe more and more Islamic. And if you want that, then good luck to you, but I don't want it, you know. I do not want to become like an Islamic state. Why do all these Muslim people come to Christian countries? No.
This kind of rhetoric upsets a lot of Germans. A few feet away from where Max and I are standing, protesters are shouting, "Get out, Nazis!" and "Get rid of nationalist thinking." Just like in the US, the anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim message here has divided the country. And even though the AfD is a small party, it's had a big effect on mainstream politics.
And with the introduction of right-wing populism, we now have basically a player who doesn't stick to the unwritten rules. A player that is immoral, that says things that are outrageous and discriminatory.
That's Christian Lude, a member of the Social Democrats, one of the center-left parties. He says, German politics used to be very civil, but the AfD changed that. And the media and politicians don't know what to do about it.
Do you try to go after them and then you make them stronger, which is probably what happened to Trump, or the over-reporting and everything made him bigger than he was? Do you leave them alone, which is bad because we think that terrible things need to be addressed? But the worst is that it's hard for us to know to what extent their messages resonate with the people that will vote on election day.
Now, he says, Germans are having to discuss topics they thought they'd gotten past.
We thought that racism was, institutional racism was gone. And we find that It is not at all. There's a resurgence of nationalist beliefs and racist beliefs. There's a resurgence of anti-Semitism.
Earlier this year, an AfD leader named Björn Höcke made a statement that shook Germany's media and politics. Here's what he said.
We Germans are the only people in the world to plant a monument of shame in the heart of its capital.
It might sound like nothing, just a politician making a statement about a monument in the capital. But it was a huge deal in Germany, because Höcke was referring to a Holocaust memorial to murdered Jews. And in another speech, he referred to refugee shelters as breeding grounds for the germs of fundamentalism in which criminals are spawned. Elizabeth Whaling is a researcher at UC Berkeley who studies right-wing rhetoric, and she's German herself.
This is really a new shift. We have not seen this type of discourse in a broad public really since the Nazi Reich.
And it's not just what's being said, it's how. She says Höcke and the AfD party leaders often use metaphors that compare the nation to a body and refugees to invaders or disease. She says it comes straight from the Nazis.
So this is a push of these political groups to call into question how should Germany feel about people that are quote-unquote not part of the German identity. But now the population they're going against is the Muslim population, saying the Islam, for instance, is like a foreign thing to our culture, doesn't fit with our culture, and so it's a threat to our identity.
To be clear, there's been a lot of infighting within the AfD party about what kind of language to allow, and Björn Höcke was almost kicked out. Most German voters, and almost 40% of AfD supporters, say the party has not distanced itself enough from right-wing extremism. So, do Beatrix von Storch's supporters believe her us-versus-them talk? And do they, like her, think German identity is being threatened? And why? The day after her speech in Augsburg, I'm on my way to our next rally. I'm driving there with Enrico Ladewig, an AfD member. He tells me they've had to change the location because event spaces in the original town refused to host them. So instead, we're heading to a tiny village, Ositzhausen bei Au in der Hallertau. No, I'm not making that up. We're passing through fields of hops, and Enrico tells me this is where all the hops are grown for Germany's beer. The campaign event is, of course, at a beer house. And inside, there are wooden tables covered with large mugs of lagers and stouts. People are eating schnitzel. A few even wear lederhosen and blue checkered shirts. It's kind of like a caricature of German culture, but the audience seems really into it. I share a table with Ulrike Döbeling and Renate Neuling, who live in Bavaria. And I ask them, what does it mean to be German? They tell me you can have German citizenship, be brought up in Germany, but never be German. Germany just isn't an immigration country, they tell me. They say being German is Oktoberfest and Christianity and places like the one we're sitting in. Here, I should note, everyone is white. Beatrix von Storch starts her speech and hits on the same point as the day before. But today, it's more extreme.
There's the question of whether we're going to make compromises with Islam. And I always break it down to a simple formula. We live in the New Age. If we want to make compromises with the Stone Age, then we'll land in the Middle Ages.
There's a lot of clapping. And when the Q&A session starts, I raise my hand. One of the organizers hands me a microphone, and I ask Beatrix the question I came here for. I say, I want to ask you, what is German culture?
Meine Frage ist, Sie haben mehrmal deutsche Kultur angesprochen. Ich wollte Sie fragen, was ist deutsche Kultur?
The audience isn't happy about the question, and von Storch isn't either. She repeats the same points she's made to me before about not wanting to compromise with Islam, not wanting Islamic law in Germany. I respond by saying that Muslims living here have to abide by German law too, just like anyone else. And then the event organizer takes the mic away from me and says, this isn't the place to discuss such fundamental questions about who is German and who isn't. But von Storch tells me, I should ask President Trump why the U.S. doesn't take in 1.5 million refugees. Then I'd have the answer to my question. As I turn to grab my things, Ulrike Döbeling, the woman I'd been sitting next to, tells me to go put on a hijab and get myself to Syria. I leave, and Enrico drives me back through the fields of hops to the train station. He tells me they're just talking tough for show. It's an election season, after all. But to me, the anger in that room felt all too real. So I mostly look out the car window and stay silent.
That story from Louisa Beck. The AfD is currently polling at about 10% of German voters. That's small but significant. Since World War II, more than a dozen right-wing groups have tried to enter Germany's national parliament, and they've all failed. But this year, if the polls are right, the AfD has a chance to win seats, which will give it a say in writing national legislation. The AfD is spreading its message against Islam with a propaganda tool that played a role in our own election, fake news. When we come back, how an innocent selfie set off a political firestorm that continues to burn. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey folks, Christina Kim here from Reveal's engagement team. You just heard how Germany's election is stoking tensions there. The same is true here in the U.S., where mass protests have become commonplace. We're working on a show about protests here in America, and we want to hear from you. Given recent demonstrations by white supremacists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville and beyond, we want to know, are you more or less likely to take part in a political protest these days? If so, what's motivating you to hit the streets, or not? Let us know. Call 510-851-8327 and leave us a voicemail. Again, that's 510-851-8327. We look forward to hearing from you.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we've been hearing about how Germany's far right is targeting Muslim immigrants through political speeches. But it's also been happening through fake news. And for one 20-year-old refugee from Syria, it became all too real.
My name is Anas Mudamani. I'm from Syria. I have been in Berlin for about 1 year and 4 months.
Anas Mudamani is a tall young man and really into photography. His Facebook wall is covered with action shots and collages he's made of camera lenses and other photo gear. It was one particular photo, though, that he snapped with his phone that started it all.
It was a selfie. It all happened because of one selfie with Mrs. Merkel.
Yes, that's a selfie with German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
Angela Merkel has spent the morning visiting a center for processing asylum applications in Berlin.
In 2015, Merkel went to visit the refugee shelter Anas was staying in. He'd been in Germany for just a few days and was excited to meet the most powerful person in his new country. He walked right up to her, shook her hand, and snapped a selfie with her. Now, at the time, Anas thought, well, that was cool. But that day, journalists were at the shelter snapping photos too. And when Anas took his selfie, they took photos of that exact moment. Anas leaning into Merkel, Merkel awkwardly giving Anas's phone camera a thumbs up. The photo got picked up by all the big papers. People started talking about the refugee who took a selfie with Germany's chancellor.
Of course, we know that he makes a selfie with Angela Merkel, but it was only a joke.
That's Anke Meve. She works as a vet and lives in Berlin with her husband and daughter and their 16-year-old cat, Neelix. named, of course, after the cook in Star Trek Voyager. Soon after the selfie, she read a post on Facebook that a young refugee named Anas was looking for a place to live. She and her family had an extra room, so she reached out to Anas. And a few days later, he moved in. Anka became his host mom.
On this time, we was a family together. We living together. Everything was, in Germany you said, Friede, Freude, Eierkuchen.
Like everything was peaceful, happy, and it's a strange German saying. Pancakes. Was as good as pancakes.
As good as pancakes. Sweet pancakes.
But then it wasn't. Reporter Louisa Beck with the online news site Coda Story takes it from here.
So how did it change?
It changed in Easter 2016. You have the big, big terrorist attacks in Brussels.
Shock and fear spread in the Belgian capital following twin blasts at Brussels International Airport.
Not long afterwards, Anka was at home after a long day at work when she got a message from Anas. He was very upset about something he'd just seen online.
And then I have a look at the internet and at Facebook, and some people taking Anas' picture with Angela Merkel and saying this was one of the terrorists from Brussels.
You heard right, that Anas was one of the bombers in the Brussels attack.
And it goes viral.
Of course, it wasn't true. And Anka thought, okay, this needs to be deleted from Facebook. So she did what anyone would do who wants to correct a mistake. She contacted the person who got it wrong and asked them to take it down.
Then I write them and said, oh no, it isn't this man. On the day the Brussels attacks were, he sat next to me on breakfast table and we looking in the television and saw the things and he was crying.
She clicked the send button and soon the guy responded to Anka.
What a sort of troll you are. Go away.
That's the response you got.
Yeah.
They told you you're a troll.
Yeah. Was bist du denn für ein Troll?
And there was more.
They want to cut up my head and take my skull on my zaun.
On your fence?
On my fence in front of our house. That's it. And me and from my family and Anas as well.
That's what they wrote on Facebook too?
That's what they wrote on Facebook.
So she set her sights on Facebook, which is how the message was being spread to thousands of users. She filed a complaint asking the company to take it down.
Every time. It's not against our community standards.
You got that same response?
Yeah. Same response every time. Never get another response.
This statement, not against our community standards, is something Anka would get really, really familiar with. Basically, it's Facebook's way of saying, we are not going to take this down. Facebook is the most popular social media network in Germany, and it's become the main forum for right-wing groups to organize campaign events and spread fake news. Their main targets? Refugees and Angela Merkel. And back in the summer of 2015, a leader from Germany's far-right political party, the AfD, took the selfie of Anas and attached it to the headline, Merkel is the selfie queen who imports violence. That made Anka angry. She contacted the guy who posted it.
Tell the truth and take it away. Now, or I go to a lawyer.
That's what you told them.
Then I was a hard guy.
You turned into a badass. It worked. Facebook didn't react, but the right-wing guy who posted it eventually took it down and apologized. Then, this past December, Germany experienced its first major terrorist attack in decades. It was at a Christmas market in Berlin.
Die Polizei geht ersten Meldungen zufolge dabei von einem Anschlag aus.
In Berlin, a truck has just plowed through this busy Christmas market in the western part of the city. So let's begin there.
People are very frightened, and it was not a good moment for Germany.
suddenly there was more fake news, accusing Anas of being the terrorist who did it. And then a few weeks later, when a homeless man was lit on fire in Berlin, fake news blamed Anas again. A few months ago, I was able to talk to Anas about how he felt when this was going on. He said he couldn't understand why people would post stuff like that.
It worried me, made me feel afraid, because I did everything right here in Germany. I'm happy here. I have integrated myself in German society. If I really wanted those kind of problems, I could have stayed in Syria.
The fake news about Anas in Germany even reached his family in Syria.
My family is really worried about me. A lot of people called my mom and my dad and told them, the police took Anas and they will destroy him. Maybe they will send him back to Syria because he has so many problems there. And I kept telling her over Skype, no, those are lies. It's wrong.
Seeing Anas so upset made Anke even more determined to go after Facebook. So she got in touch with a lawyer, a guy named Chan Jo Jun.
What has been really dangerous on Facebook is that it's not the organized radicals who are already in their echo bubbles and echo chambers. It is people from the middle of society, people who one time just posted family pictures and pets and food, all of a sudden were exposed to radical opinions and fake news and believed those.
He says there's a lot of stuff on Facebook that's illegal under German law, where free speech is more restricted than in the US. Like, deny the Holocaust or glorify nationalist socialism? That's a criminal offense in Germany. Incite violence or hatred against a group of people? Also illegal. State an opinion about someone? Well, that's legal. But a false statement about a person that ruins their reputation? Illegal. That last category, that's the one Chan Jo wanted Facebook to acknowledge. Because all of these fake news articles used Anas's selfie to claim that he was a terrorist. That's illegal, because it's not true.
I sent registered mails or emails to Facebook and thought, well, they will have to take down those examples I sent them, and then I can just demonstrate this is the solution.
He sent them about 19 pages of examples. And for a while, no response. And when he did get replies, he says, it was always some excuse. Your attachments don't open, the emails got cut off, etc. And finally, Chan Jo gave Facebook an ultimatum. Delete the posts, or he'd press charges. And that's what he finally did. He became the first German lawyer to put public pressure on Facebook by taking them to court over their handling of fake news. The judge made Facebook remove some of the posts with Anas, but ruled against Chan Jo in the lawsuit. And when I asked Chan Jo about losing, I thought he'd be bummed. But he wasn't.
But you're like so optimistic and like happy.
Actually, I think this was the most successful lost case.
It was a successful lost case because soon after he made the lawsuit so public, the government decided it was going to take action on its own. Major action. This spring, Germany's Minister of Justice, Heiko Maas, drafted a new law requiring Facebook to take down speech that's clearly illegal within 24 hours, or else they'd have to pay a fine of up to 50 million euros. That's about $60 million. And that might not seem much to a multi-billion dollar company like Facebook, but they could get fined any time illegal speech is posted. So multiply that number by 100 or 1,000, and it quickly adds up.
My hope is if this law will be passed, that no Anas Modamani will ever have to go to court again.
The law is called the Netzwerkdurchsetzungsgesetz, which means the network enforcement law. And you might think, cool, story over. The Germans pass this German-sounding law, Facebook takes down Nazi speech, Anas and Anke live in safety. Friede, Freude, Eierkuchen.
As good as pancakes, sweet pancakes.
But no sooner was the law proposed that it became a huge controversy in Germany.
It's a crazy idea to think that the networks are responsible for people who behave badly on those networks.
That's Ulf Burmeier, a judge at the Berlin District Court. He thinks it's the courts, not Facebook, that should decide whether something is or isn't hate speech.
It's a really hard question to decide if content is really illegal, because even German hate speech laws have themselves to be interpreted. Even many courts get it wrong, so that only our constitutional court gets a final say on these issues. And I really can't see a company like Facebook deciding these cases.
He says the law will lead to a sort of de facto censorship because Facebook will try to avoid the fee at any cost. So they'll just start taking everything down that could be illegal, even if it's not. We contacted Facebook and a spokesperson wrote back, "This law, as it stands now, will not improve efforts to tackle this important societal problem. We will continue to do everything we can to ensure safety for the people on our platform." I wanted to talk to the people who drafted this law in the first place. Why such a huge fine with so many possible unintended consequences? So I went to the Ministry of Justice and Consumer Protection.
Hello.
It's in a stately building in the middle of Berlin. And I walk through a grand entrance, past a framed copy of the German Constitution, and meet the ministry's state secretary.
I'm Gerd Billen, state secretary in the Ministry of Justice and Consumer Protection.
I ask him whether he's worried that the 50 million euro fine will cause Facebook to over-censor its content.
There is no censorship. They have obligations. They are private companies. They are here for business reasons. Their license to operate is depending that they delete criminal content. So they have to decide.
He says other companies like Google and YouTube have ways to process complaints and ensure content isn't illegal under German law. So why shouldn't Facebook do the same? The real problem isn't that they can't, it's that they'd have to spend more money. And to get them to do that, you have to play hardball.
Why is the fee so high? Like, from the outside, you could say this, I mean, it's political theater.
They have a really high impact on our societies. They see themselves as technology companies, but they are more. They are influencing our society. They are influencing the kind of dialogue we have. And it's fine. But they also have to be aware of unintended effects of their work. And that's about hate. The radicalization within the net is in many cases the first step for radicalization in practical behavior. So it's not only about speech.
After Germany accepted more than 1 million migrants and refugees in 2015, there was a surge in right-wing extremism. Hate crimes jumped from about 1,000 2 years ago to almost 1,700 in 2016. Researchers say it's at least partly due to a hate climate toward refugees. In July, Justice Minister Billen got his way. The law with the 50 million euro fine passed and is set to take effect next month. No one knows yet how effective it'll be, but Facebook said in a statement that they're hiring 3,000 people on top of 4,500 already working to review posts. And in the past few months, Facebook deleted thousands of accounts that were spreading fake news. People who make fake news are fighting back on forums like 4chan, where they generate and distribute fake news anonymously. They say their goal is to create a meme war to disrupt Germany's election and score points for the right-wing AfD party.
Hallo, hi. Wir haben gerade Kinderparty.
Okay, cool.
Komm rein.
I recently went to visit Anke in her apartment in Berlin to see what she thought about the new law. And when I arrived, she was eating breakfast with her daughter Lisa and her husband Andre.
Könntest du es mir bitte platt machen?
Ah, die Wurst. Warte mal.
Schinkenwurst.
Anke is still preoccupied with fake news. And she now calls herself
Fake Hunter. And that's now my hobby. I do it.
Oh, so your hobby, so you're a fake hunter, which means you track down fake news.
Yes.
and then you say this is wrong.
Yes. That I'm doing. And I write articles for Mimikama.
Mimikama is a website that debunks fake news. Writing and researching for the site has become a big passion. Anke thinks it can't be just up to Facebook to deal with hate speech.
I think this work, everybody can do it.
So you're saying we all have to be fact checkers?
Yes, we all have to be fact checkers. All. Before you share a message, check if it is true or not. Because if it's not true, then you are also guilty.
There are still fake news stories about Anas, and I ask about him. She tells me he moved out a few months ago.
Do you think it changed him, that experience?
Yes, I think it changed him. A change is a big word, but it has a big influence in his life.
The refugee who took a selfie with the German chancellor had become a symbol of the terrorist threat in Europe. And then he was celebrated as a hero for taking on Facebook.
A lot of popularity for young men who are fleeing, a refugee from a Syrian civil war. So I think...
And also extremely negative and extremely positive stereotypes, though, right?
Yes. And the stereotypes are not him.
Anas was given a visa that allows him to stay in Germany for 3 years, but it's not clear what will happen after that. He's working at McDonald's and has applied to study at the Technical University of Berlin. The subject? Information science. That story was produced by reporter Louisa Beck. Fake news and disinformation aren't just coming from Germany's far-right political parties. They're being imported from, wait, you'll never guess, Russia. When we come back, suspicions of Vladimir Putin meddling in the German election on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hi there, I'm Andrew Donahue, Reveal's managing editor. Over the last year, we've made investigating hate groups one of our top priorities. Long before Charlottesville, we were tracking the funding of leading white nationalists and trying to understand this new wave of extremism. Our reporters have embedded with white supremacists in Illinois and Antifa enforcers in Berkeley. Now you can follow along with them in our weekly newsletter. It's called The Hate Report. And signing up is easy. Just text HATE to 63735. We'll add you to the list. Again, text HATE to 63735.
If you're looking for another podcast to fall in love with, check out this one from our friends. It's called Ground Truth from WGBH and the Ground Truth Project. Their latest season is called New American Songbook. Hear how music helps immigrants stay connected to their culture. From a Cambodian child who carries on his family's secret musical legacy to a security guard who dreams of being a hip-hop star in his home country of Haiti. You can find Ground Truth on iTunes, Radio Public, Stitcher, or anywhere you love to listen to podcasts. Learn more at thegroundtruthproject.org. And now, back to the show. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. Today, we're looking at the rise of right-wing groups in Germany ahead of next week's federal elections there. Angela Merkel is expected to win a fourth term as chancellor, but this could be the first time since World War II that a radical right-wing party wins seats in parliament. Just weeks before the official election season began there, President Trump gave a speech in Warsaw, Poland that got a lot of attention.
It is a profound honor to stand in this city by this monument.
He's standing in a public square in front of a big crowd cheering his name.
The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive.
This is President Trump's first major European address, and he alludes to a clash of civilizations.
Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it?
Many hear that as meaning the West versus the Muslim world. Just blocks away, a well-dressed crowd of people is gathered in a hotel conference room, watching the speech on TV. Reporter Alan Greenberg of the online news organization Coda Story was there. What was the reaction at this conference to what Trump was saying?
There were a lot of gasps at Trump's speech where he talked about civilizational struggle.
The reason for the gasps? Many feel Trump's words echo those of Vladimir Putin. They're at a conference about Russian interference in Europe. It's put on by an American think tank called the Atlantic Council, and the main question on the agenda, how will the Kremlin try to influence Germany's upcoming election? Some of the people were trying to figure it out.
I met with Ben Nemo, who is perhaps the leading investigator, digital sleuth.
What we've seen in the Russian model is, you could think of it as a tactic of vilify and amplify.
In other words, pick your targets, smear them, and then spread the story as far as you can. Tracking disinformation is Ben's specialty. He digs into social media for the Atlantic Council to see what stories are being spread and who's spreading them.
He is able to determine who these people are, where they're coming from which countries, from what servers, and what they're trying to do. What messages are they trying to amplify? Who are they trying to reach?
Now, hashtags are very useful for people who create them so that they can track how well their message is doing. But they're also very useful for analysts, because a hashtag is an identifiable string which is very easy to put into a search engine and find all the results.
Alan, does Ben believe that Russia is meddling in the German election?
Yeah, I mean, I think he knows Russia is meddling. I think only the Russians at this point are denying it.
So what kind of stories are the Russians amplifying? For one, bad news about immigrants, whether those stories are true or not. One of the most infamous examples from last year is something called the Lisa case.
A 13-year-old Russian-German girl was reported to have been kidnapped and raped by migrants, either of Turkish or of Arab origin.
The story took off.
It appeared on social media, and then it was very quickly cycled through the Russian media. The Russian foreign minister cited it. Russian television really went to town. It was explosive.
But it soon became clear that it wasn't true. The crime never happened. It was fake. But some people still believe it.
It's this hugely divisive, very racially tinged fake event that the Russian media, I think it's fair to say, exploited to the hilt. Putin sees Islamophobia, a fear of migrants, as doing his bidding. The more Europeans, and for that matter, the more Americans are skeptical about immigration, about diversity, the more Russia can promote its interests without Western interference. So what they're trying to do is sow confusion and create a certain amount of chaos.
There's a character in Game of Thrones named Littlefinger. He's a real mover and shaker trying to move up. And one of his key statements is the chaos is a ladder. And that sounds exactly like what Putin and the Russians are trying to do. What you're explaining is that they're creating chaos so they can move forward in the world order.
It's all about chaos. I think that's exactly right. What this is about is undermining your confidence in your political system. Because in the end, what the Kremlin is trying to do is have the space to promote its own foreign policy. And to do that, they need a weakened West. The Russians have made no secret that really their overarching foreign policy aim in Europe is to neuter as much as possible NATO and to undermine the European institutions like the European Union that act as a bit of a bulwark against Russian adventurism.
And there are a lot of people in Germany who are receptive to that point of view. Since the end of the Cold War, more than 4 million Russians have moved to Germany. Many of them still get their news from Putin's state-controlled media.
Russian news is a bit of a funhouse mirror. It's distorted news from a Russian perspective. It's media that jumps on any crime from migrants, and it's seen as a real fuel for the far right.
This is from a TV channel called Russia 24. It's about the upcoming German election, and the anchor saying that it's quite likely Merkel will lose her post, even though that's not true. So that's disinformation, but what about hacking? Now, the Department of Homeland Security said that Russian hackers potentially targeted election systems in 21 U.S. states. Have we seen anything like that in Germany?
In 2015, Germany's parliament was massively hacked. Nobody can prove it was the Russians or anyone else, but there's been radio silence ever since that hack.
But a lot of people are convinced it was the Russians and that they could spring a last-minute surprise to discredit Merkel right before the election. One theory is that it has something to do with her chemistry PhD.
The second theory is that Merkel collaborated with the Stasi. Merkel grew up in East Germany. She was an adult in East Germany before the wall fell, and that this hack will somehow reveal that she collaborated more than was usual with the East German secret police, and that this somehow will be very damaging to her. But nobody knows. Nobody knows what's in the hack and what could be revealed.
So with all that being said, if Merkel wins, can we take a big sigh of relief? I mean, is that the end?
I think people can take a small sigh of relief, but ultimately it's not the end at all. You know, Russia has real foreign policy interests in the region. Whether we're going to see a much more fragmented, violent Europe or something else is something that is going to play out over the next several years.
That was Alon Greenberg. He's the publisher and co-editor-in-chief of Coda Story, our partner on today's show. While working on this week's show, we noticed a lot of similarities with the right-wing movement here in the U.S. Remember when German far-right leader Beatrix von Storch said this about Muslim immigrants?
It's a very clear line what we have. Islam does not belong to Germany.
Well, that sounds a lot like what some people from the far right in the U.S. have to say.
I do have a problem with the Muslim migration. They don't want to assimilate. They're ghettoizing. They're going into their whole neighborhoods, and then a lot of rape is happening. And they're basically destroying 1,000-year-old cultures.
Next week, we'll look at the provocative rallies being staged by right-wing groups in the U.S. and the response from their opponents on the far left who show up at right-wing rallies looking for a fight.
So I'm saying we break his legs now so that then maybe he'll consider the next time if it's worth it to him.
That's next week on Reveal. Our show today was reported and produced with our partners at Coda Story, a new media venture that does in-depth crisis reporting. Catherine Miskowski was our lead producer. Chisato Tanaka helped with fact-checking, and Taki Telenitas was our editor. My man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, is our lead sound designer and engineer. He had help this week from Claire C. Note Mullen, Catherine Ray Mondo, and Kat Shuknit. Our head of studios, Krista Scharfenberg. Amy Powell's our editor-in-chief. Suzanne Reber's our executive editor. And our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.